Blog Talk Good Radio.
Good evening. To everyone, welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks. Today is Saturday, August 26, 2017, a great day to be alive in America. I am Haleem Mustafa, a modern-day achiever, your co-host, joining you from Houston, Texas, along with our globally distinguished host and moderator, Professor Marshall Washington, who is a senior great-grandson of Dr. Booker T. Washington, founder of Tuskegee University in Alabama. I join you, as well as him, from our virtual family living room as we sit around a warm fireplace sipping our favorite alcohol-free refreshments so we can have a sober conversation on tonight's topic. Tonight's topic is: if Black Lives Matter, what must African Americans do to keep law enforcement officers from having to kill us to protect their own lives, as they claim? I'll say that again. The topic for tonight is: if Black Lives Matter, what must African Americans do to keep law enforcement officers from having to kill us to protect their own lives, as they claim? Well, I'm Haleem Mustafa, your co-host tonight. And we have certainly, my host and moderator, Dr. Marshall Washington is waiting, but I want to make an open prayer as a part of the what we do as a tradition here. And please bear with me. With the name of God, Allah, our soul, universal creator, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to our creator, the cherisher and sustainer of all the worlds throughout the universe, seen and unseen. Most gracious, most merciful, master of judgment day. Thee alone do we worship, thy aid, guidance, and protection we seek. Show us the straight way, the way of those whom thou hast bestowed thy grace, those whose portion of success is not wrath and who go not astray. Amen. Let it be so. Now, as I mentioned, our host and moderator, he's actually an author of a book that's very, very important book historically to give a lot of very important, pertinent information. And it can be purchased online, and that information will be provided before the day shows in. The book is titled Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And it's a book that I highly recommend. Because a lot of us have not been there to see the historic history of the life unfold from the perspective of one as Professor Marshall Washington, who I like to call the professor, has witnessed growing up. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our host and moderator, the professor.
Thank you very much. Good evening to all that are listening via the internet, and to all who will be coming on the show in a few minutes, we hope. We're going to begin by reiterating that our co-host, the Doctor of Self-Esteem, Brother Halim Mustafa, did announce. We're going to just reiterate it. A very profound topic. It's something that we do need to discuss in our family room discussion on Booker T. Washington Speaks. And the topic again is if Black Lives Matter, and of course we know Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, but if Black Lives Matter, what must African Americans do to keep law enforcement officers from having to kill us to protect their own lives as they claim? Now, we put it like that because this is what gets them off the hook after they have killed us, is that they had to kill us to protect our own lives. They claim this, and they're generally supported by the courts. So something that we are doing is not getting the courts to back us up, even though in many cases it's quite dubious if we were really doing something that required them to protect their lives by killing us. Like, for example, the brother who was actually running away from the cops. Well, obviously, the policeman's life was at no time in any danger with the man fleeing in opposite direction, yet he shoots this man in the back. But then, in many cases, the law enforcement officials are given immunity from prosecution, or they're found to be not guilty, or they're found to having committed the killing as a matter of self-defense or justifiable homicide. This very sad situation in my personal experience that I'm going to share with you, and then I'm going to read something from my book so that you'll be acquainted with some of the things that I present in the book, because I'm really trying to promote the book as well as the ideas in the book. But about 6 or 7 years ago, I learned that a very, very close friend of mine, who I've become even closer to after this incident happened, had lost his son. I think his son was about 22 years old, somewhere in his early 20s, as a result of being killed by a policeman not far from their home. Now, the situation was this, from what I was told, from what I understood. And I visited that family, prayed with that family, and tried in whatever way I could to console that family, because they called on me for support, for grief support, for emotional support. And I went there on several occasions to pray with them and to try to help them get through this, because this is a very close family, a good friend of mine and his wife who lost their son. Now, what I was told, I didn't read the police report, but what I was told is that this gentleman had just retired as an officer in the United States Army after spending over 20 years, because you have to do the minimum of 20 years to retire. He had previously been an enlisted man, had enlisted as a private, had worked his way up through the ranks, being a sergeant, master sergeant, and later becoming a chief warrant officer, which is a commissioned officer in the armed services. Very highly respected in his military life and his military profession. And after he retired, he got a government job working, you know, on a military base. And he bought a home in the area where we mutually live, in a predominantly white neighborhood. Most of the nicer homes that are not brand new homes, unfortunately, are in predominantly white neighborhoods. Now, there are some nice ones that are in predominantly black neighborhoods, but these are relatively new homes that are just being built. But the older neighborhoods that are still really nice are predominantly white neighborhoods. And so this family found a nice home in this predominantly white neighborhood. And the son, who, from what I understand, had been having some problems, I guess you could say anxiety type problems, maybe even having some problems reacting to authority. I don't know the whole story, but I do know that he decided, after they had just moved into this neighborhood, to take a walk early in the evening in the neighborhood. Now, in the South, most white people immediately start looking out their windows after sunset to see that the streets are safe, that there are no strangers walking up and down the streets, and especially black people. The law is black people don't belong in white neighborhoods after sunset. That's been a law in the South for many years. Now, these people didn't know that this young man's family had just moved into the neighborhood. So their neighborhood watch alerted the police patrol that patrols that neighborhood, and the police stopped him to interrogate him to find out what he was doing walking around in that neighborhood. Their approach probably was heavy-handed, and I don't know because I haven't read a police report, but apparently in their effort to question him, his reaction out of fear, out of serious fear, was not the reaction that solicited the most calm response from them. So they asked him to get in the car. They didn't know where he lived, and apparently he didn't have his ID on him with an address in the neighborhood, so they were going to take him down to the station so they could run a check on him and get some more information so they could decide what to do with him. In the process, they asked him to get in the car, and, or maybe they wanted to pat him down, and he resisted. He didn't want to have all that happening to him. He was just out for a stroll. He didn't want to have an altercation with the police, but they made the altercation by doing what was in their police procedure, which was basically trying to make sure he didn't have any weapons that could harm them or harm himself, and then were trying to put him in the police car. And he began to fight them, and so they subdued him in the way they had been trained to do. They put a, what we call, commonly speaking, a choke on him. And he died. Now, I went to that family's home. I went to the man's funeral. And it saddened me, because that could have been any one of our children in that similar kind of situation. Now, the thing about it, there are laws that I learned dealing with police when I was that age. When I was 22 years old, I was down in Alabama in my hometown of Tuskegee. And we had been taught since I was a young child never to do anything to cause police any reason to feel that you weren't going to obey them. No, sir. and do whatever they told you to do, and certainly don't try to resist them. But a lot of our young people today aren't getting these lessons, and they're reacting out of fear, in many cases out of extreme fear, and emotionally, they're not responding with good rational responses. So that's just something to introduce. I had this experience because I've still been counseling. I'm still helping this family deal with their grief. I visit them frequently, and they'll never get over it. And so every time I go around them and I look at the mother and the father, their grief of losing their child is just permanently etched in their faces. You can see it from a mile away, so to speak. I want to read something from my book because it is part of my purpose in this program to share some thoughts with you from my book. And I want to quote something from Imam W.D. Muhammad. He says that it is important for the upliftment of African Americans that we will get more respect if we establish independence in terms of making choices for ourselves and by ourselves. We will get more respect from other ethnic groups if we had the courage to follow our ancestral spirit, the best of our past, and grow into something more uniquely of ourselves as other people have done. Imam Wallace D. Muhammad also confronted African Americans with blaming too much on white people without trying to understand why the white man feels about us the way that he does. Imam Muhammad says that African Americans have not tried to find out why white people do not desire our presence among them, especially when the white society welcomes other ethnic groups, Asians, for example. It is because of the group unity and ethnic community spirit that they have, the spirit to do for self. Imam W.D. Muhammad, an admirer of both Booker T. Washington and Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, reminded us of what Dr. Du Bois advocated, quote, "The extent to which we will progress in the future depends on the extent that we will go on in teaching our children to think for themselves." And then Imam W.D. Muhammad said, in language similar to Booker T. Washington, quote, we need people to study our condition, to study what has happened in our life's history to bring us down. We need to save that which has transpired that will lift us up. This we need to know if we are to discard and throw away that which happened to bring us down. We need leaders who will work for the good of the common lot, the whole common lot. We need a sense of identity that will make us feel comfortable in our souls. We must have a sense of identity. We must have a sense of being and a purpose on this earth. We must have a sense of worth as a people. We should know what accounts for our excellence and what accounts for our degradation. I'm going to stop right there. Obviously, if our life experience has been that of having been degraded by white people as a community of people, if our experience has been that of having been degraded by the people that represent power and authority, namely the police officers, then naturally our response is going to be from a position of feeling degraded and emotionally upset when we are confronted with these people. And so I don't blame that young man for having been upset when the police pulled up beside him and probably in a forceful, maybe even an arrogant voice, told him to stop in his tracks and to stand still, maybe even lie on the ground is what is being done now, and then so forth and so on. But the fact is that as leaders and as people, they're concerned about our young people surviving to even get to the age of 25. It used to be, we would say if they were lucky, if they got to be the age 30. And now we have to say they're lucky if they even get to be 25, because so many of our young people, as I was telling our co-host, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa earlier, you know, they're big enough at 12. Some of them are really still small at 12, but some of them are big enough at 12, 13, 14 years old, that a 5'8" or 9" police officer that only weighs 160, 70 pounds might consider this young black 14-year-old to really be a serious threat and will react accordingly. And so that young black child needs to be taught, as I was taught as a 12-year-old, not to do anything that's going to cause this police officer to feel frightened, where he has to unholster his service revolver and feel like he has to protect himself. Because as, and he can speak for himself because he is a former police officer, and I told him as we talked this evening, once a police officer, once a policeman, always a policeman, just like once a Marine, always a Marine. Once a Navy chief, always a Navy chief. These are things that the training and experience on the street, on ships or whatever, in the field, put in you that you don't lose. And so we were talking, and I mentioned to him that the young people today are causing certain kinds of self-defense reactions in the police officers that he can speak about because he's been out there on the street as an officer, that make them have to do what they're trained to do. And just like soldiers in the Army, and I spent 30 years in the military where I was trained and repeatedly trained on the use of firearms, pistols, rifles, automatic rifles, and so forth. And we're not trained to shoot people in the hand, to do like the cowboy movies, have a good guy shooting the gun out of the bad guy's hand. We're not trained like that. We're not trained to shoot people in the leg to make them start running towards us. We're trained to shoot them where the vital organs are, with the exception of the brain. We're trained to shoot them in the midsection. And that way, if the shot goes high, we're still going to catch them either in the chest or in the head, so that they will go down and won't come back up to be a threat. That's how we're trained. And the police are trained the same way. Because if you're going to shoot somebody in self-defense to make them not be able to attack you anymore, you want to make sure that they're not wounded like a lame animal and get back up and with more ferociousness start attacking you again. You can't afford to do that. Most people don't realize that that is what the police are trained to do, just like we soldiers are trained to do. So having said all that, I'm going to turn it back over to Brother Halim, Dr. Halim Mustafa, the doctor of self-esteem, so he can comment based on what I've said. And then we want to invite our audience who are listening to give us their comments about what we're talking about. For those who just joined us, I am Marshall Washington Cabinet Sabui, also known as Professor Marshall Washington. Professor Marshall, my students, I just tell them to call me Professor Marshall. I'm also known as Imam Marshall Musa Muslim Abui. So I have several different hats that I wear throughout the week. But our topic for tonight, I am the host moderator, and our co-host is Brother Halim Mustafa. And our topic for tonight, for you who just joined us, is this: if Black Lives Matter, and we know they do, what must African Americans do to keep law enforcement officers from having to kill us to protect their own lives, as they claim? They say they have to kill us to protect their own lives. That's questionable. But police officer, Brother Mustafa, could you give us some of your perspective concerning this topic?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine.
Wonderful. It's a two levels of thinking. For sure, going to the police academy as a rookie cop, you have a lot of anxiety in anticipation of coming to the streets. Now, once on the streets, typically what you learned in the academy, it's not really applied like instantly. Only experience gets you to be a good applier of the of what you learned in the academy. And a lot of times, certainly in certain communities where there's a high crime activity, typically white officers who do come to those towns come there to have fun and learn about some of the aggressive commands and treatment of people from those communities. It's just what is a fact. Because in the white communities, the white officers don't have that same level of activity engaging the young white children in their communities, they know them as Brother John or Sister Sue. They're pretty much like family in what they do and act toward each other. There's a whole different communication level when it comes to the community of African Americans or people of color, white officers from communities that don't have a lot of exposed African Americans in their environment. The activity, and I found this from working and also being a victim of police misidentification of me as a former cop too. So, point is that there's a two-edged sword we have to deal with here, and it's going to take some intellectual surgery to really separate it and put it together. So that we can make law enforcement truly work for people who are truly, as the enforcement law enforcement policy or purpose, may say purpose, is to protect and serve. And that's not saying just a certain group of people. That's saying everybody that's in the your neighborhoods, even if they're not in your neighborhood. If you go into a different city, you still have to have that same temperament of treatment of people. And certainly my experience working in the city of East Palo Alto for 10 years, a city that once was managed under the county of San Mateo sheriffs, primarily white officers or Italian white, Chinese wannabe white, and blacks don't want to be black. Because sometimes if you show too much, respect to black people while you're patrolling, some of the other officers from the other culture, they feel that you're not, you know, being a tough guy. They expect you to treat everybody like you're a MMA fighter in terms of little simple things. I mean, really simple. Okay, I remember having a situation where a police officer, we knew these were junkies shooting heroin in the veins in the car. That's what they were doing. We knew that from observation. But police officer come up, took his revolver out, a 357, and cocked, locked it back and said, "If you move, I'm going to shoot you." Now, that was an intimidation move. It could have been an accident to shoot that person as well. But some people play like it's a game in certain communities. Now let's take that to the white community. This young black man, as you say, walking through. Now certainly, he might like be not a normal thing you see in your community. Approaching him, caution, I learned caution, is basically, if I can get close enough to you and communicate, anything that you might try to do, I've been trained to kick your butt. I know like little martial arts moves, you know, and how to you know, if they show you, for example, I'll give example. So if a dog is running at you, barking, blah, 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 and if you run, he's going to keep chasing you. Now, if he's running to you, bark, 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 and you stop, you come aggressively toward him, the dog going to stop and pause and say, "This fool is crazy too," and back off. Now, what I'm saying in relation to that is that the police officer, in my case, I would stand like in a position like close enough where if he stepped forward, I'm going to step forward toward him, and I'm going to do some action based on what I'm feeling that he's trying to do. But for me to come in and first thing pull a gun, I don't know that was a circumstance, but I tell you this, if he was having a walk in the community and I was stopping to talk to him, I wouldn't certainly be wanting to bring a temperament of attitude from myself that would transfer into his thinking process to cause a negative reaction as to receiving me. See, I you have to learn that you communicate in ways that open, that relax people. You don't communicate in ways that intimidate people, because even a third grade child or kindergarten child will respond negatively if you have a negative response initially. So I believe that the police officer in this case, if that is that he pulled a gun and then shooting a young man or simply choking him out, it's like the unnecessary steps. For example, to put him in the car, what was the reason? I mean, the young man wasn't being violent or talking or intoxicated. If you make an assessment, was he on drugs, narcotic? What's the reason that you put him in your car? That's a big concern to me. Because sitting him on the ground would have been fine if you're really that scared. See, I wasn't a coward cop, and I say that because some cops are cowards first because they come in the community and they learn to be a little more like Superman in terms of being like courageous. But if they took off their uniform and guns and be somewhere in the community or someone in the proximity where they run across these people they call these extreme criminals, you will see the true behavior of them as cowards. Now, I'm a former cop, so I'm not talking biasly against cops. So I'm just talking truthfully what I know, what I experience. A lot of times, those guns, like John Wayne, they call it don't avoiding the John Wayne syndrome. And they teach the academy, don't be heavy-handed. Put your hand on your gun and lean on your gun handle. Because somebody, there's a weather channel thing here in Houston. They're having a big storm, so they're just doing these alerts every now and then. But they tell us in the academy, don't be heavy-handed. Don't stand talking to citizens with your gun, hand on your handle gun, pushing it down like you're ready to make a quick draw. Don't be in how you address people. Be respectful. And let it escalate, not from you, but from them. So if I'm going to escalate already in my communication, automatically they're going to escalate. And then at that point, then I may have to become physical because my escalation to the next level is an argument. So they teach you to be very casual in your approach, in your conversation. And for example, you ask the young man for his identification, if he has it. You want to at least, before even that, just inquire, you lost or you need some help. I mean, a question of not to disarm him, but to make him feel comfortable that he also is a citizen of this country. So my question would be to the young man, may I help you? Are you okay? Welcome to the neighborhood. I haven't seen you before. It's my patrol. I just want to introduce myself to you. And then, of course, in what happened, as they had fear, I'd be interested in knowing what they said in the report myself. Right? Why did you put him in the car? Did you do a cursory search of his body, see him on, he had no gun or anything on him, gun or knife or weapon on him? And, was he, after being shot or whatever, killed, was there any narcotics in his blood? Was any narcotics in the car or on his person? So it's a lot of questions that have to be answered, but that's just one example. Now, let me just take, for example, a situation that happened to me. And I had retired from law enforcement in the community that I lived. But in the community that I lived, I lived there as a cop. All my life I've been there. And so I'm driving my car with my son on University Avenue, a main thoroughfare. And I'm going 35. The limit's 35. A rookie cop, right, was with a veteran officer who happened to know me. And so the rookie cop, he gets out of his car. I step up my car, and I have my hands open, reaching, asking him what is the problem. And his response first is, get back in your car! Get back in your car! Get back in your car! I said, officer, I'm not doing anything. I'm standing, asking you a question. What is the problem? Now, he don't know me as a former cop. The other officer recognized me as a former cop. He knows that I trained him, the officer that's in the driver's seat of his patrol car. So the rookie cop just going in terms of, what they do as a game to see how much mental control they get to put in fear in the people that's in their neighborhoods, in this case, a black community. And this is pretty typical. See? Unfortunately, there's a degree of racism that's been instilled in the system, unfortunately, in America, And I'm not sure how long this incident occurred, but I hope and pray it's not because of the president that we have that is promoting this level of what is isolation and judgment and, you know, those kind of things that makes people become more racist. But as a solution, my would be twofold. Certainly, I would think that we might engage a ID or something that they give to the police officers anytime they stop them to let them know that I have my rights here, therefore, on this card, and there's a number to call in case you want to deal with me in any criminal matter. This number is my attorney who's on call for this situation. Because we have to understand that there are legal rights that citizens have to walk in the day or night. And I remember as a cop at 3 o'clock in the morning or 12 o'clock in the evening, midnight, when certain athletes or grandfathers or, you know, or mothers want to exercise at night because it's real quiet and still in the community of East Palo Alto, it's like a family, right? Black people family, right? And white officers would ask, what are you doing out here at this time of night? Now, these are grown people they're talking to. They're telling a grown person, what are you doing out here at night? What do you, so this it's another message that's being implied that we don't want you out here at night. Stay inside your house. Don't come out at night. And that is not a right of the cop to tell a human being that's a taxpaying citizen that you have the right to come outside at night. You get some exercise, some fresh air, whatever. So I would tell them, you know, these people are grown. This is a certain way you act and respect them and the level of customer service. So I've said a whole lot. I don't know if I certainly answered your question, but I'm going to kind of be quiet and let you chime in. If you have anything you want to ask me, I can be more specific or I can continue some examples.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, we have one caller that I know has been on for a while and probably wants to say something, but while you're getting your thoughts together based on what Brother Halim said and what I read, because you've been on, I guess, since we started, I want to just play a little soft music just for about a second or two, just so you can kind of, you know, just think about what you want to say, and then we're going to continue. Just a little minute here. Okay, so that was what I call ease up music, just to kind of ease the mood up, because we're getting into a heavy thing now, and I know that I responded that we're getting ready to invite to say something now, maybe have some real feelings about this topic, so we are going to invite our caller from the 518 area code, the last three digits of your phone number, so you'll know we're talking to you, 043. So would you like to comment on what former police officer Halim Mustafa, also our co-host, Dr. Self-Esteem Halim Mustafa, has just discussed, and also what I discussed earlier. Would you like to go ahead? You have the mic. Okay, well, you know, it's not uncommon that we have participants that come on and they don't really want to say anything. They just want to listen. But this particular show is a participatory show, and we don't try to make anyone feel uncomfortable if they don't want to say anything, but we do certainly like to hear your comments. And so without you commenting, that leaves it to those of us who are actually commentators, you might say, which is right now Brother Halim and myself. So I'm going to ask him to come back in a minute. You think about maybe if you do want to say something, you can break in on me at any time. I'm not going to feel slighted if you do that, because I'd like to hear from you from out there in 518 area code land. But in the meantime, I do want to say a plug, advertising my book. My book is entitled Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. And at the beginning of the book, there's a picture of one of the famous flyers, a black Air Force pursuit pilot flyers that was trained at Tuskegee, now famously known as the Tuskegee Airmen. And this person has his officer uniform on, his flight uniform on, with his officer insignia, his silver bar on his shoulder. And I have put over his head in this picture on the beginning of the book, you will respect this United States of America uniform. And yes, you will call me sir. And during those days back in the 1940s, 1942, when the first Tuskegee Airmen were commissioned all the way up to 1945, it was very hard for these officers who were very, very well trained by the U.S. Army Air Force, a very intelligent young men. Most all of them were college graduates. All of them had some college. And the white men that they ran into didn't want to call them sir. They couldn't see why they should call a Negro sir. But these men had earned the right to be considered to be officers and gentlemen in the common term in American culture. That you would address a person of gentlemanly stature would be sir. And ladies were called ma'am. And the white people didn't want to call these people that had earned the right to be called sir, sir. So the book begins with that. And it picks up from that, that we, though we may have legal rights to be considered to be, you know, ma'am and sir, we still have to fight to be able to achieve that. And so in my book, which is Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, which I invite all of you to buy, I would like for you to buy not just one copy, but several copies, so you can give a copy to each one of your children. So if they go off to college, or even if they're finished school, that they can refer to it from time to time. The pearls of wisdom that are not mine, but from people like Frederick Douglass, one of the greatest men in African-American history, known as the great, great liberator, one of the great abolitionist speakers from our community who escaped from slavery and then promoted the freedom of other people, even offering to enlist in the United States Army to go back down south as a 40-year-old man, 50-year-old man, and fight to free the rest of his people, our people, from slavery, Frederick Douglass. And you should read his autobiographies, Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass and My Bondage and My Freedom, so you can understand the struggles that he had to go through to be recognized, where people would be willing to say sir to him. Also, you have excerpts in this book from Marcus Garvey, the great Back to Africa movement leader. And he said he wasn't really trying to get our people, even though he did buy some ships and was willing to transport people back to Africa if they wanted to go. But he said the spirit of being back to our natural manhood and womanhood that was deprived from us in the slave-breaking plantations is what he meant when he said back to Africa. We have quotations from him in this book. We certainly have quotations from Booker T. Washington, my great-grandfather, and we have quotations from another great leader of our people named Reverend David C. Walker, who wrote a famous, famous message to white people and to black people as well, called David Walker's Appeal. That also appears in this book. And then we have writings from the great freedom fighter, the martyr for freedom in my time, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was a personal friend of mine. And I certainly want you to hear in this book, read in this book, what he has to say about what our people need to be doing for ourselves to earn the kind of respect that we are demanding that other people give us. And then, too, we have writings from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm Shabazz and Emmanuel Wallace Dean Muhammad. And there's several others, including student leaders like Stokely Carmichael, one of the Black Power leaders of my generation. But many, many things in this book you may have heard before, but we put them all together into a nice package so that you can have it by your bedside. The book is, this particular edition is 233 pages of power. It's only $20 plus postage, about $3 for shipping or postage. And the book is available to you right now. And all you have to do is send a text message to the number. I'm going to give it to you right now. I'm going to give it to you before we close, because we're going to be closing in a few minutes. The number is 706-399-5006. 706-399-5006. One more time, 706-399-5006. Send a text message to that phone number, put your name, how many copies of the book that you would like, and we'll get in touch with you at the number from which you send the text message to make arrangements to where to mail the book or books and how you can pay. And you can pay through several means. We'll discuss that when we contact you. So as we get ready to close, we're going to bring Brother Halim on, and we're going to ask our caller from 706, last three digits of 336. I see you went away and you came back, and we're glad that you came back. So we want to reiterate our topic. If Black Lives Matter, what must African Americans do to keep to keep law enforcement officers from having to kill us to protect their own lives, as they claim? And you hopefully heard Brother Halim's response as a former police officer. And so we're going to go ahead and let you have the floor, as they say. So our caller from 706-5336. Okay, what would you like to say?
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everybody. It's Bayana. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what can be done, because I recently saw a video from a police officer who resigned from the police force because he couldn't deal with the racism on the police force. He was African-American, and my personal opinion about the police department is that the KKK came off the streets and went into the police force, and what better place for them to hide out and do their dirt and do the legally kill Black people, which is what they want to do anyway. I don't know what we can do except get people to get these people off the police force who are affiliated with the KKK, because that's where they are. You know, they're not out here walking around with their hoods on anymore. They're walking around with a uniform on, supposedly pretending to be the peacemakers, the peacekeepers. I'm not saying that all of them are that way, but that's where they're hiding out. It's just like in the school system. It's full of people who are pedophiles, because what better place to hide out for a pedophile than to be school, to be around children? So what better place for the Klan to be than the police department and the military? You know, anything to do with law enforcement, that's where they are. So I really don't have a solution for that, and I get very angry when I even get into a discussion about what can be done. So that's all I have to say about that, and good evening to everybody.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Bain. We certainly appreciate that. We're running out of time. We decided we're going to keep the show down to an hour, unless we had a lot of participants that we didn't want to leave anybody out. And I see Bain dropped off. She said her piece and she's gone. But we hope that you heard what she had to say. We're going to ask our caller from the 518 area code, last three digits or 043. If you do, before we close, if you'd like to make some comment, would you like to make a comment? Okay, our caller from the 518 air code has chosen to remain silent. So we're going to turn it back over to you, Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa. The Dr. Self-Esteem retired.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Police officer. Go ahead, Dr. Haleem Mustafa.
Yes, I want to say that in the idea of law enforcement is to protect and serve. And today, unfortunately, without evidence, credible evidence, you can't make cases against police officers who are going to hide behind the badges. So I really think the cameras work. The body cameras will work. They do work. And making sure that the legality use of the cameras at all times while on duty at all times without having them the ability to turn them off. Have them turn on. We have technology that can do rocket ships and go to different parts of the universe. We must have these body cameras to work in a way that records everything, because that's what they do, right? Those cameras work like that. And utilize those cameras and make that evidence that stands strong as to whatever contact is made, so that even if a person has a complaint against the police, that those body cam would be exposed what was the reaction and or the communication between the two. I believe that is the answer that has been that has not been fully utilized. I'd like to see that happen. I also like to see that police officers is a brotherhood, and I'm in that brotherhood, so I'm not talking against it. I'm only saying that the improvement must occur, because even when you find your brother doing wrong, you're supposed to pull him back from the wrong. And that's a biblical, a spiritual, a message of morality, that my brother is doing wrong as a police officer. Let me pull him back so he doesn't make the police officers as a group be stereotyped as these bad guys. And I want to pull my brother back so he won't get a mark on his soul as doing something evil. See, we have to understand that that behavior of being overly aggressive, it has a base, in my opinion, as being a base of evil. Because it's hard for me as a human being to come up and without antagonism, without being antagonized by the person I'm approaching, to get angry. See, I know I can fight. I know how to fight with hands, with feet, with gun, with mace, with stick. But the best fight is with words. So we have to teach these police officers who cannot communicate how to communicate in ways both verbally and non-verbally. So the body language really determines the attitude of the person that you are approaching, that you might call a suspect or a subject. Those are two distinctive words that describe what the circumstance is. We have a suspect. For me as a police officer, that's like be alert. Let's come closer if we can to help. It might be a situation, suspect, suspect, operative word. Subject, subject is saying, like, I'm just stopping the subject here, and it's not inferring that something is kind of real serious for a subject being stopped. Now, I know that the POAs, the police officer associations, and the Black Police Officer Association, and I assume Asian Police Officer Association, Hispanic Police Officer Association, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There has to be the kind of communication about what you call public relations, because public relations is a part of a very, very important thing that I learned from personal experience. If you don't have good public relations, you are vulnerable to getting yourself hurt in a situation where citizens could help you, but if your populations in advance of your activity that might get you hurt will cause citizens to throw rocks at you, or let me just give you an example. For example, I'm working undercover in a community that I'm born and raised in. That's kind of stupid, but I had to do it because we didn't have the body. So it's raining a little bit, dark about midnight. All the young people and a lot of dope dealers hanging out and selling dope and drinking and having fun. So the corner had to be cleared. So I got in my undercover black rain gear, and I walked up on a young man who comes from a family of dope dealers. He had his hands extended in the window of a driver's car on the driver's side, and I saw, as I flashed my flashlight in his hand, a lot of rocks. So quickly, I put my flashlight somewhere where I wouldn't have to drop it, but I don't know. I just grabbed his hands quickly. Now we're in a fight because I'm taking him down. He got to go to jail, right? So we're fighting. I lose my gun out of my holster, which is a clamshell model. Now I'm still fighting, and the people behind me, they could have rushed me in behind and beat me, hit me, stabbed me, whatever. I was definitely vulnerable. But they were yelling to him, stop fighting me. They're telling him, stop fighting me. They know me as Mustafa. Stop fighting Mustafa. Stop fighting Mustafa. So in any event, I apprehend the young man. He's not thumbing his nose. He's crying really loud because he thought he was above the law because his family was dope dealers and they're above the law. So I apprehended him in handcuffs. I realized my gun wasn't in my holster. And lo and behold, someone came behind me and gave him a gun. Okay, now that just showed me the idea of what is a term that police officers use, which is a Latin term for citizen come help. So the lesson for me and the lesson for anybody who's listening, especially police officers, need to understand your proactive communication as public relations with the citizens will help protect you in the long end. So the posse comitatus is a term that means citizen come help. And that normally if you say that to a citizen, that where you're in a fight with somebody that's trying to, you know, you have to fight that takedown, if you yell that term to a citizen, that's a federal law if they don't respond. That's a federal law. So posse comitatus is a Latin term that you should embody in customer service. So in my case, I couldn't yell, citizen, come help. I'm getting my butt whooped. I couldn't say that. But they knew me from my public relations early before incidences, and so they responded in a way that would be come and help me as I'm requesting. I need some help. So anyway, that's just a lesson. But I want to say this, bottom line. Police officers, whoever you are, don't let the weight of the badge and the weight of the gun make you feel that you're above the law, because you're not above the law. No one is, not even our president. This country is made of laws to protect us. And the spiritual books, the Bible, Quran, and the other books that are out there, there's laws. There's laws, and that's for a reason. So please, obey the laws yourself. Get off your cell phones while you're driving. Talk to people like you got some sense, and treat them like they're your brother or your father or your mother. That's all I have to say, sir.
Okay, well, thank you. We're about ready to close up. I do intend to go around, as we always do, for one last comment from our participants. But before that, I do want to read something from my book, again, as I am actually promoting my book. That's one of the things I do on my two shows, the show that I do tonight on Saturday, and then also the show that I do on Mirage Speaks on Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern until 8 p.m. And I just want to share this information concerning our situation. A critical part of the Black Revolution, and the name of the book is Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A critical part of the Black Revolution was the search by African Americans, initially by college students and later the masses, for an identity that expressed a new paradigm, which was known as Black Power. Whereas Booker T. Washington pursued practical education and economic self-sufficiency, moral excellence, and community service as the means to achieve Black Power, the militant Black revolutionaries of the 1960s and 1970s, of which I was one during that time, I belonged to the organization which represented the apex of Black Power called the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But the militant Black revolutionaries of the 1960s and 1970s sought to achieve their power by making white people fear them. It's a reverse psychology that Elijah Muhammad had put into us to try to get white people to fear us, to get them off of our people's backs. This was back in the old days when the oppression was very intense. But their implied role model of the militant Black revolutionaries was Nat Turner. Now, later it became Malcolm X or Malcolm Shabazz, but initially it was Nat Turner, the murderous Black slave. I'm sure, you know, in some cases he had every justification for murdering people that were seeking to murder him and his people. But anyway, the murderous Black slave of the early 19th century in Virginia. Never mind that Nat Turner's life ended at the end of a hangman's noose, along with his militant cohorts. He was definitely a martyr for the cause of Black liberation, but they did catch him and hang him. And this example of Nat Turner served the purpose of the modern Black revolutionaries to intimidate the cringing white liberals and the Democrat-controlled government back in the 1960s that sought to protect the white liberals. Coupled with the Negroes' militant fear tactics to wring the maximum concessions from white people, especially the liberals, there's another deck, there's another card in their deck. This is the speaking of the Negro militants. And this is the tactic of victimization. Victim is the root word. Victimization is the noun that talks about people who feel that they are victims. Expressed in the extreme, this tactic of victimization goes like this. Some people may seriously disagree with this, but this has been my experience ever since I was probably 12 years old of observing our situation as Black people, and this goes back over 60 years, that I've been looking seriously at this situation, and I've come to this conclusion. This is my writing. Every shortcoming that I have, this is what the people that are victimized say, every situation and every shortcoming that I have as a human being, including my ability to get and hold a job and provide for my family, is the result of American white people putting my people in slavery for 250 years. Now they owe us, and as a result, they should give us a free ride for the rest of our lives and require absolutely nothing of us, including having respect for the law and law enforcement officers. So I think part of this, unquote, I think part of this problem is that we feel that no matter what we've done, certainly the young man that was strangled to death, that's a child or was a child of a friend of mine, hadn't done anything really that I would charge him with to make that happen to him. It was just an unfortunate police reaction to an unfortunate circumstance. But so many of our people feel that we can go over the speed limit, not have our seatbelts on, and then as soon as we get stopped, as soon as we see the blue lights flashing, all of a sudden our defenses go up, and then we want to find some reason why we shouldn't have gotten stopped. Sometimes we even make up lies. I got to rush here. My cousin's in the hospital. Big lie in the emergency room. I got to get down there. And the only thing you're trying to do is get over across town to some friend's house. And not realizing that we brought that on ourselves because the law says we're supposed to drive in a certain area at a certain speed limit. And we should get stopped and we should get a ticket. And if we've been using intoxicants, we should get arrested so we can get off the street and pay a penalty for endangering people's lives. But a lot of our people don't want to see that we bring a lot of problems on ourselves. And so what I'm saying, my position, and I'll be finished and let y'all speak, is that we need to examine our own selves, examine our own consciousness in relationship to what the police departments have been legally charged to do in terms of upholding the laws that were hopefully voted upon democratically in the legislatures and in the city councils. And we should support them by not disobeying these laws, whether it's involved with drinking and driving, with using drugs and driving, or selling drugs, or speeding, or stealing, or whatever the things are that we get charged with. And because as soon as we get ourselves in that position, we can expect, if not sooner, later, that we're going to be put in a situation where we're going to have an interface with an officer of the law. And if we do anything that makes that officer of the law feel insecure about his situation, we may end up being in the morgue. And that's just a fact of life. So I'm going to go around. I'll leave it to the end for you, Brother Dr. Halim Mustafa, to do the closing remarks. I'm finished with my remarks for this evening, except to say goodnight when we get to the end. So I'm going to go back to you, Sister Baina, and give you the opportunity to say some closing remarks, if you would like to.
Okay, yes. The body cams, I guess they will work, but if they keep them on, which there have been cases recently where they haven't been keeping them on, people have wound up dead or whatever. But stuff trickles down from the top. So we have a president that just exonerated a sheriff out in the West somewhere who tried to blame his behavior towards the immigrants after the law had been passed, but he was not to discriminate against the people. He tried to blame that on his deputies, and that didn't work. So then before they can sentence him or send him to jail, it's probably a whole bunch of Mexicans buried out in the desert because of him and his deputies. Now our president has exonerated this person. And he's a big-time sheriff, and he was a supporter of Donald Trump. So, you know, stuff trickles down from the top. So I can understand the brotherhood, but I think there's a brotherhood within the brotherhood that part of the brotherhood is not privy to. And when I think about people like Rodney King, I see this man lying on the ground being beaten by a bunch of cowardly police officers who are in a totally different brotherhood from the real brotherhood that's supposed to be there. So this brotherhood that our brother was speaking about earlier, I don't know if it's real or not. I don't know if that's a reality. I think that's some kind of fantasy or I don't know, an illusion or something. It's not real. That's not real. I have visions in my mind of videos out in Seattle where the people on the police, some of the police on the police department took a 17-year-old boy, beat him so badly, and then folded him up like he was a package and carried him out after they killed him like he was a piece of garbage to be thrown out. For nothing. For nothing. So I get very angry when I think about the brotherhood, you know, because I know that there's a brotherhood within the so-called brotherhood that you're talking about, brother. And I understand how you feel because you're a part of the so-called brotherhood. But it's just like with the Masonic Order. If there was truly equality in this country, there wouldn't be a black Masonic Order. There wouldn't be a black police association, an Asian police association, and Spanish and all that. It would all just be one police association, but it's not like that. So the reality is that something else has to be done besides putting somebody putting a camera on somebody. That's not going to get it. That's not it. Because you can turn that camera off. We need to clean out the police department. You need to root these people out. You need to do some kind of psychological evaluation and find out who these people are. I think they need to have an ongoing, some kind of ongoing evaluation of people who work for the police department. They should be screened for drugs weekly because I think that some of these people are on drugs and they're out there trying to tell other people not to use drugs. Come on. That's not the reality. It's not real what you're talking about. That's a figment. That's some kind of imaginary world that you want for the police department. It's not real. That's all I have to say.
Okay, Sister Biden. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And now she's dropped off, and so we're wrapping it up. We're going to give our caller from 5181 final opportunity. We don't pressure to take it. Well, we don't want to close the show without giving one final opportunity to give us your input if you would like to. This is from 518, the last three digits, or 043. So anyone who hasn't spoken, I'll just put it like that because maybe you don't realize I'm asking you to speak. So anyone who hasn't spoken, if you'd like to say something, you have a chance right now. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and go back to you, Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa, our brother, our friend, our dear friend, and our doctor of self-esteem, who also is a retired East Palo Alto, I hope I'm correct when I say East Palo Alto, police officer, to do our wrap-up, and then I'll say goodnight on behalf of the show. So, Dr. Haleem Mustafa, it's yours.
Yes, it's correct. I is City of East Palo Alto, California, incorporated in 1983. And it was a black community. Now it's being gentrified due to corporations moving in and taking major, major land. Unfortunately, that's the reality of a lot of black communities. The idealism that I spoke of as brotherhood is real to those who now there. You can't determine the clandestine behavior of people, even in churches. You have a certain internal group within a group. And so you have to have trust at some level of what would be systems, legality that would help change and deter certain behaviors. Now, I know a lot of police officers they travel back and forth to different police agencies, getting fired from one, and having legally the record of their previous employment not made available, which that has to change. That should be something to change. So that roots out some of the ones who are getting fired from one agency and going to another agency and doing some of the similar things and just having their record sealed so that they're protected. So that's definitely something that needs to be looked into and changed. Also, I believe there need to be a paid citizen watch group that get paid dollars to go out in community with cameras, video cameras, and legally be able to take police officers in action. And that's legal to do. It's already been proven that as long as they're not in the middle of the situation, in close proximity to become a distraction or even someone who could be a potential assisting the bad guys or even the good guys. But those cameras, the Black Panthers actually started something like that. And so that's something that I know would definitely deter me if I was in a position of being a evil police officer. And I say evil with real knowledge, because I've had police officers who I work with who were very evil, black ones and white ones and Chinese ones, right? Now, surprising. Sometimes police officers do things to deter the people certain ways, but to rip a man's pants off because he's homeless and walking in the neighborhood and he's black in his neighborhood walking late at night, nothing to do, he's not working, he's homeless. But to show off a black cop to a white cop, you stop him, you frisk him, and you rip his pants off as a joke. So I know having those body cameras, and they can rig them where they won't cut off. They can rig them where they trigger automatically. So technology definitely has a something that you can do here. And so we got to be very clear that it's more than just the police. It's Citizen Watch. The combination will help eliminate some of the bad behaviors. And I would like to see that become a job where people get paid jobs to watch the police. It would be a good thing to do. Now, there's other things that certainly I would like to say, and if I have two minutes, I'll say what I want to say. Okay, no one is above the law, not the president, not the generals of the military, not the police chief, the reverend, or whatever. We have to enforce the laws as they were written. If it was idealistic, presented as the laws of this country, and we know that the Constitution, we live by that Constitution, we die for this country. If we cannot have the constitutional values spiraling down to the neighborhoods that the Constitution is set to protect, then we have to change the Constitution. That's all to say. I'm finished. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And before we close, we want to, for the benefit of those of you who have not been listening to our show for the last few months that we've been doing it, the show is archived under Blog Talk Radio, Booker T. Washington Speaks. And we just want to review or go over some of the topics that we have discussed, so you can go into the archives and you can still listen to the shows that we've done in the past. For an example, we had a show recently, and the topic was, quote, "It appears that in the race for economic prosperity, African Americans in general are falling farther and farther behind today. Is the purpose of formal higher education being fulfilled for African Americans today? Is the purpose of higher formal education or formal higher education being fulfilled for African Americans today? And if not, why not?" And then another show that we had, the most recent one we had, was "Should monuments to honor Confederate Army heroes be allowed in public buildings and in public areas? Should monuments to honor Confederate Army heroes be allowed in public buildings and in public areas?" And then another one was, "What do African American college graduates expect to achieve in the future? Upon what realities are these expectations based?" And then another one was, "Do African American children need to become acquainted with African American literature in schools, that's just a sample of some of the programs that we have had. And I'll just give you a couple more. We actually go back several months, so we have a lot, but we're not going to give you all of them tonight. But you'll find them if you go on Blog Talk Radio website, Booker T. Washington Speaks, and you can see the whole list. But a couple more. Or what can black churches do to curb black-on-black crime? What can the black churches do to curb black-on-black crime? And another one was a discussion of Booker T. Washington's vision of education for living, saying that Booker T. Washington wanted to see African Americans enter the all-powerful business and commercial world. And in 1917, is the institution that he established at Tuskegee, Alabama, following him to achieve his vision? In what ways is Tuskegee University doing that? And in what ways has Tuskegee neglected to do that. And we followed it up with the question, how can African Americans come together to provide an education for living for our aspiring young people today? And we'll stop right there. But these are some of the programs that we have archived that we've done here on this Blog Talk Radio show in the past. So we invite you all who are listening via the internet and those who tune in tonight to continue to listen to our program each Saturday evening right here. The number for those who are listening via the internet, if you want to call in and participate, you may do that. The number is 657-383-0671. 657-383-0671. One more time, 657-383-0671. We offer our prayers, and we encourage all of you throughout the country and throughout the world that are listening to our program to offer our prayers to the victims of the hurricane. We know that there's been much devastation in Texas and some of the coastal areas and even inland in Texas, severe flooding, and we're happy to hear that the hurricane has been degraded to a tropical storm, but the flooding is still continuing. Waters are still rising. A lot of damage has been done. I heard that one school even collapsed because of the winds and the waters. So let us pray for all of the people that are affected. Apparently, you're safe, Brother Halim, and we thank God for that. But we hope that all of the people will be able to continue their lives after doing whatever's needed to recover. And we definitely pray for those who have lost family members or who have become seriously injured. We will always feel compassion for anyone that suffers misfortune. So our prayers go out to all of the people affected by the hurricane. So we now close. We always like to close with some nice soft music. And this is a piece that we're going to close with. And you can stay on and listen. We'll play it for about 3 or 4 minutes. And we say thank you for listening. Good night. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And God bless you.